Subtle applause. Thank you. How's everybody doing today? How's everybody doing today? Yes. It's just better when we all work together. Thanks for being here, and thanks to the Patriots for having me. My name is Trey Wingo. I work at ESPN, host NFL Live, NFL Primetime, NFL Kickoff, and any other NFL show I think they can come up with. It's a delight to be back here for a second year in a row. And I just want to say, as Patriot fans, you guys, it's great to see so many season ticket holders out here. And I hope you appreciate the things that the Kraft family does for you. These kind of events are not done for a lot of fan bases. And the Kraft family does a really nice job in taking care of the people that support the team. So it's great that that relationship between the ownership and the fans is so strong here. We're delighted to be back hosting this. Once again, for ESPNBoston.com, our pre-draft special. How many of you guys were here last year? Excellent. All of you that were here last year, I got no new material. All right? So you guys are going to have to suck it up and sit through it. As I always say, if you invite me once and I screw it up, that's on me. But if I screw it up and you invite me back, that's your problem. But I can tell you, you did not come here to listen to me talk. We got some great panelists here. We're going to talk about what the Patriots are going to do, not only in the draft, free agency, and how they can possibly get back to being that team that won 3 Super Bowls in 4 years. So let's meet, I always wanted to say this, let's meet our panelists now, ladies and gentlemen. First up from ESPNBoston.com, he's covered the Patriots since 1997. He joined ESPNBoston.com in 2009. He reports, he blogs, and he hosts Reese's PAT and much more. Mike Reese is here. Our next panelist at Brigham Young was a 2-time All-Western Athletic Conference center, leading the Cougars to the 1984 NCAA National Championship. He was a former first-round pick of the Patriots in 1985, and a current ESPN college football analyst, Trevor Maddich, is here. By the way, we were upstairs a few minutes ago and someone asked Trevor, Trevor, when was the last time you were here? And he said,
it was when it was Sullivan Stadium.
So it's been a while.
I've seen this.
It's been a while for Trevor, and it's nice to have him back. Judging by the number of jerseys in attendance, I really don't think I need to say anything about our next guest, but I'm going to. Yeah, that's right. That's right. 3-time Super Bowl champion. Played in 5 Super Bowls, Pro Bowler. When he retired, Bill Belichick called him the perfect player. And now that he's on my team, he's my perfect teammate and a perfect analyst. Teddy Bruschi is here.
Thanks, Jay. Reese! Hi, everybody.
By the way, you want to know what it's like to be invisible? Go to any Patriot function and walk behind Teddy Bruschi. You could probably get away with any crime you wanted to. By the way, I think it's very important as you take these pictures of Teddy. Isn't it nice of him to be wearing Raven purple for this Patriot?
I offset it a little bit by wearing my Super Bowl ring, though.
There you go.
I offset it, yes.
I'm going to pay for that when at work next week.
You will.
Yeah. Actually, I may be paying for it in an hour and a half. But it was worth it. Before we get started about what's to come and what's going to be ahead of us for the New England Patriots in 2013 and the draft and beyond, let's take a look back at the season that was in 2012.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Toyota's Patriots Today. I'm Jackie Britton. Football may officially be over, but this season was full of memorable wins and nail-biting games. Now, as the team gets ready for what lies ahead in 2013, first, we wanted to recap some of the best moments from 2012, including some of those unforgettable plays, game-winning field goals, and all of the ingredients that got the Patriots to the AFC Championship game in the first place. The Patriots started their season off in traditional fashion with a win. Their 9th straight season-opening victory.
Oh, what a play by the Patriots' Vincent Wilfork.
But they were humbled quickly after Game 1 in Tennessee with a second game loss in the home opener at Gillette Stadium.
Patriots lose the home opener.
And in one season, no team is without its fair share of nail-biters.
The Patriots will escape with a win over the Buffalo Bills.
And blowouts. Pats fans could rest easy a couple of times this season, whether the Patriots were at home.
Touchdown, Stephen Ridley. Patriots go over 40 points.
Or on the road.
diving catch. Money. Touchdown.
We learned a lot about the rookies.
Going to be hit and sacked. The ball is fumbled loose. Pounding into the end zone. Touchdown. The sack came from Chandler Jones as the rookies combined.
And the veterans never cease to impress.
Thundering hit.
Brady loves it right now.
It is good.
And despite some injuries, the Patriots proved that the next man up mentality is more than a saying. It's a part of the way they play the game. The season may have ended sooner than they wanted, and with 2012 officially in the books, the Patriots can get set for what lies ahead. Even though the days on the gridiron are temporarily over, that doesn't mean much for Patriots.com because we've got you covered year-round with all of the latest up-to-the-minute Patriots news. So be sure to keep it locked right here on Toyota's Patriots Today.
All right. So it was another good season for the New England Patriots, but as you all know, not the ending everybody wanted. So I guess that's where we have to start this discussion, guys, and I'll wander this over here a little bit. The Patriots have been to so many Super Bowls and so many big playoff games over the last 7, 8, 9, 10 years. Teddy, I'll start with you. How many more times do we think the team, as it's presently constructed, most notably with Tom Brady and Bill Belichick, can get back to that pinnacle, that back to that opportunity to win another championship?
Well, Trey, I think you have to look at the potential that the players are on the roster right now, and realistically, in the next 2 years, I mean, they still have a legitimate shot to be a Final Four team, which means you're either in the AFC Championship game or the NFC Championship game. And I think a lot of fans are starting to learn that no matter how good the team is, okay, or how well they perform in the regular season, when it comes to the playoffs, there's just there are certain moments of truth, okay, when a ball is thrown up and it's either Anquan Boldin or Devin McCourty or I believe Marquise Cole or those type of players, or a tackle has to be made or a quarterback has to make a throw, a receiver has to make a catch. It's either those plays are made or those plays aren't, and that's how you advance. But the way they are, the team will be there in the end. I mean, an AFC, hats and T-shirts are already being printed for them to win in the AFC East. I mean, probably. I mean, the competition there isn't that stiff, but...
Butt fumble.
Yes. We can talk about that with the New York Jets. Just saying that with that team sums it all up. Yes, it does.
That's the single greatest play in the history of the NFL. And I have some good friends of mine that are Jet fans, but it's just, you can't see that enough. I mean, you just... I'm sorry, continue.
This year especially, guys. Yeah, they're going to be there, and just looking forward to seeing them in those situations again.
Mike?
Well, I would agree with Teddy. You know, one of Teddy's former teammates, Junior Seau, used to say something, and it was, all you want is a chance. And you look at all 32 teams in the league, and I don't think all 32 teams in the league have a chance to compete for a Super Bowl. The Patriots do. I look at it, and starting with Bill Belichick and Tom Brady, that's a good place to start. You obviously need more than that, but I certainly think they'll be right in the mix again.
Yeah, and what they really need is stops. When you look at the defense, in both playoff games, they gave up 28 points. They scored about 34, I think, against San Francisco in the regular season and lost that game. Against Buffalo, they gave up 28 and 31, won both of them because the offense was able to outscore Buffalo. So in order to get back to that pinnacle, what they need is more reliable capability to stop the other guy.
This has been, for lack of a better phrase, I remember Dan Shaughnessy once wrote this after one of the AFC Championship games here. These are the good old days for the New England Patriots football team. And I think that was after the AFC title game that got you to Super Bowl 39 in Jacksonville, where you beat the Eagles. But with Andy Reid out at Philadelphia, Bill Belichick is now the longest tenured head coach in the NFL. Tom Brady, of course, has been around for a while, and we've seen Peyton Manning move on to the Denver Broncos. How many more years do you guys believe Brady and Belichick will be here together?
I'll lead us off here. I mean, I think, Trey, obviously the big news this offseason was Brady signing that contract extension.
Which was a raise, not a pay cut. It was a raise.
Which takes us out 5 more seasons. So I think if you ask Tom Brady, honestly, how long do you want to play, he'd say to that point plus. I think he wants to even play beyond that. Of course, the question is, can he play beyond that? And the one thing I'd say that Bill Belichick has said over the years that has resonated with me is when you get to that stage in your career, The end can come quickly. It drops off fast. We haven't seen that, but we have to be aware that that's the case.
It does drop off quickly, yes. It's a matter of when one day you're in training camp and you're looking, in my case, you're looking at yourself on film and said, I remember watching a splicing of film when we were running a particular defense in training camp in 2009, and it was similar to what we were running in 2004, and it would spliced in, and then you see the 54 of 2009, and then the 54 of 2004. It's like, man, that guy's good. It's like, man, that guy's slow. So you know the end comes pretty quickly. Do I think at the end of that contract, Reese, what's he going to be, 40?
Yes.
Tom?
Yes.
Do I think he's going to play that long? I would say that's the max, okay? That's the max you're going to get out of Tom Brady. Does that sound bad? Does somebody not like that? It's tough to step away from it and be realistic about the entire situation. Is Tom Brady going to stay 100% healthy for the next 5 years or 4 or 5 years, which it's going to be? There's going to be aches. There's going to be pains. There's going to be hits, okay? There are going to be offensive linemen that are lost. I mean, realistically, I mean, 3 to 4? 3 to 4, I'd say. I mean, I love what Tom's saying about playing till 40. Man, that's hard. That's hard to do.
But don't you think it's the most frustrating thing about it dropping off so fast is that the more years you play, the more you know. The more you understand your opponent, the more you get the game, the more you know how to prepare for it. But then you watch yourself on tape, and your body isn't doing what your brain knows now, finally, what it's supposed to be doing. Anything more frustrating than that?
Yeah, that happened to me in the seventh grade. So, I mean, believe me, it's frustrating. But with Manning moving on, I'm sure it resonated to a lot of people here in the fan base because of the Brady-Manning relationship and the dynamic and the rivalry that's gone back and forth. Patriots have always done a really good job of finding a quarterback to build up and then trade. But are we at the point now where they need to find a quarterback to make sure he's here for whenever that end comes so quickly? And is it Ryan Mallett?
I think they're doing everything they can. I mean, let's be realistic. When Tom Brady does stop playing, I think, boom, the window's closed. But then the guy that comes after him is going to have the job to sort of creaking it open a little bit. I mean, with Tom Brady there, the window's probably like this, right? I mean, when he's gone, you shut it, and then maybe Mallett's the backup, and you start creeping it up a little bit. He starts getting better and more experience, and it starts opening it up a little bit more. I think Mallett is a commodity that they have, a valuable commodity. I mean, I've spoken to the kid. I know the kid. He loves to work hard. And coming out of college, a lot of questions were about Ryan Mallett and his work ethic and his attitude, and I've heard nothing but good things about it.
When we talk about this topic, 2005 and the Packers is what sort of stands out to me. You have Brett Favre. You know he's got limited years left, and Aaron Rodgers is dropping down the board in the first round. Would you take him? And so I'd say, based on your question, Trey, if the Patriots are there, I think the answer is no. I don't think they're thinking along those lines, and I don't think we've seen anything that they should think along those lines. What they did with Mallett was smart. Third-round pick. He's got 2 more years left on his contract. They also have Mike Kafka, who was with the Eagles, was a fourth-round pick in 2010 on the roster. They'll try to develop him. I think that's the smart approach right now.
I think if Mallett has any sense at all, he'll want to play out that contract, sign another one right here. Because if he is the guy to take over for Brady, look at what he's inheriting from a program standpoint. And really, Brady is part of the reason this program, this franchise is what it is. You look at on the field, he makes the throws, it's accurate, okay, that's all very nice. But one of the things that makes Brady so effective on the field is not just that he knows his own offense. He knows defenses as well as the defensive players do. He can look at a pre-snap read, then take the snap and take one step back and see them start to move out of their disguise into the actual coverage, into the actual blitz, and immediately know what every defender's assignment is. That's why he's able to get the ball to the right guy at the right time right now. And that's something Mallett will need to learn, and that takes a long time.
So in a perfect situation here, I mean, Mallett's doing his work to get better as a quarterback and doing everything he possibly can, but really you don't want to see him play. You don't want to see him play because you have Tom Brady. He's the guy you want in here. Continue the coaches. Listen, they coach backups. They coach practice squad players. It's what they do. They'll continue to coach Mallett. But he needs to do his development during the preseason and
during a 45-0 blowout victory when he gets in the second half of the fourth quarter or something
like
that.
But he'd better pay attention to how Brady is a leader, too.
Yeah.
Another reason that this team has been so good for so long, even when the talent has fluctuated around Brady, is because he demands that everybody play in a very tight fashion, that they prepare in a very tight fashion. Every individual Patriot has always given the very best he's got in a very narrow role because Brady demands it. And he's the kind of leader that doesn't get that performance from his teammates because they fear him. It's because they do not want to let him down. They want Tom Brady to look at them and say, yeah, that teammate gave me everything he had, and I'm proud of him. Mallett will need to learn that leadership style because that is one of the reasons this program has been so good for so long.
And I'm glad, Mike, that you brought up Brett Favre in 2005 with Aaron Rodgers, because outside of Steve Young replacing Joe Montana or Aaron Rodgers replacing Brett Favre, those transitions can be difficult from that iconic Hall of Fame quarterback to the next guy.
Trey, so they drafted Rodgers in 05. He didn't play for three full seasons. And that's three seasons that the Packers have to answer the question, is it time? Is this the year? Is this the year? So when you make that decision as a coach, you have to be prepared for that distraction. And I know Belichick's has the great ability to avoid distractions, but that would probably be the biggest one you could potentially bring into the locker.
But this this coaching staff's ability to, you know, you're set at quarterback and you have it there, but continue to build what's around him. All the other pieces, all units, all the way down to special teams, the returners, bringing in Washington this year, always bringing in better players around Tom Brady because, I mean, they know if he goes down, okay, that team still has to be strong. I mean, when he went down in, what was that, 08?
08,
yeah. Went down in 08 and Castle came in. I know Castle inherited a team that went 18-1 previously, but still, they want to keep the team strong. If something happens to Tom this year, Mallett has to come in, but that team's still strong where they can win 10 games.
By the way, before we go any further, I just want to apologize to this side of the room. I know the view you're getting isn't great, so I didn't draw this up, so I feel your pain. I just want you to know that. I'm talking to my guys here. Yes, you, ma'am, you rock. Okay. Really, they're getting the short end of the stick over there. We talk about Brady. Obviously, players have much more limited windows than coaches. Bill, as we said, is now the longest tenured coach in the NFL with one team. How many more years do you think he'll want to do this? Because it consumes him. We know that.
That's a great question. I mean, well, how long do you
thank
think?
Thank you, Tim.
I mean, and I'll help these people out over here so you can see.
There you go.
Everybody wants to know, all right? Everybody wants to know how long Tom Brady's going to play, but realistically, how long is Bill Belichick going to coach? That's a pretty good question. And you think forever. And Belichick always brings out that I'm not going to be Marv Levy around here or anything like that when he talks about the old Buffalo Bills coach that coached till, what was he? What was he, 70, 80? 80, something like that.
Yeah.
But Bill Belichick, what he's done here and constructed this organization and the organizational structure, the development of coaches from defensive assistants to offensive coordinators. You see, I remember when Josh McDaniels was on the defensive side of the ball, just a defensive assistant, and he was putting together tapes to make us laugh on Friday. Really, after the Friday practice is over, we're in meetings, and all right, Josh, what do you got today, man? And he put together some geographic funny animal videos or something like that. That was his job, right? But we knew this kid wasn't always going to be on the defensive side of the ball doing this, ended up being the quarterback's coach, then the offensive coordinator. That's how Bill Belichick develops his young coaches. He'll put them on the other side of the ball first so they understand the other side of the ball and then bring them over to what he thinks they'll be. Their defensive coordinator, Matt Patricia, was an offensive line coach when he first started. So knowing both sides of the ball. And so I think he's doing that with almost like when I leave, this place will still be okay because they've got two great head coaching candidates that are already there in defensive coordinator Matt Patricia and offensive coordinator Josh McDaniels. One of those two guys may be the next head coach of the New England Patriots.
My theory on Belichick is plus two. Tell me how many years Tom Brady is going to be playing and add two because that's how long Belichick will coach. And my thought on that is when you get to the end of your career, you start thinking about your legacy. And if you're Bill Belichick and you're thinking about your legacy, what are the two biggest things that people might question? Number one is videotaping and the impact that had in the Super Bowls. So you want to try to win another Super Bowl after that. Number two, would be, can you win without Tom Brady? So that's why I go +2 for Bill in terms of how long he'll coach. Tell me how long Brady will play, add 2 years for Belichick.
Yeah, I think he'll go as long as he feels he can do it at a high level. But he won't diminish as a coach from a standpoint of talent. But I think all of us get to a point at some point where we do something so much for so long with such great intensity that we're almost congested in a way. And we're no longer able to do it with the same kind of enthusiasm and joy. And as long as he has the joy and the enthusiasm, I think he'll keep coaching.
That's funny because joy is not a word a lot of people would associate with Coach Belichick.
Yeah, but
he internalizes his joy.
It's the definition of joy for him, though.
Exactly.
It's a totally definition from our definition of joy.
If it works for him, that's all that matters to you guys, right? Bill is an interesting guy. He's so intelligent, obviously went to school at Wesleyan, knows the game. He's just a different breed, and that's one of the things that really sets him apart. Let's take a listen to him. Bill Belichick mic'd up now.
John, how you doing?
Coach, how are you?
Good.
Hey, Coach, good to see you.
A regular. Get you all the time. Yeah, we get you every month. The Super Bowl, Buffalo, here, man.
I'm like a bad penny.
No, that's not true at all. Hey, buddy. Good to see you, too, Hunter.
Good to luck the rest of the year.
Thanks, you too. Yeah, campaigning for you for the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, I appreciate that. That's one of those things, you know?
Yeah, I know. Someday, though. Hope I'll be invited.
Good front row.
Hey, how you doing, Reg?
Good, you all right?
Have another great year.
Right.
Hall of Fame career.
Gostkowski boots it deep.
Matt, let's get some pressure on these guys. Go ahead. Let's get some pressure on these guys this series now.
Coming in on lock. Able to get away. And just throw it away. Edelman takes it on the fly. 35, 40, 45, 50. Far side. 40, 35. He's inside the 35. 30, 25, 20, 15, 10, 5. Ring it up. Touchdown, Julian Edelman. Woo! That was pretty.
Look, we got to get the call from the linebacker.
With the right, Luck on the play action is back to throw, steps up, lets it go, open, and intercepted. Overthrew it to the far side. That's Tlaib at the 45, 40, 35, back to the left of the 20. He's a
get in there. Get in there.
Aqib Tlaib, welcome to New England.
All right, long way to go.
Ballard with a wriggle and a gain of 5.
Look, all the runs are going to our right. So I'm going to put you over there on the right. I think that's what they're doing is they're running away from you.
And this one's not going to go anywhere as Wilford and Ninkovich again double up.
That's a good series right there. That's a real good series. And when he steps up, then that's when we're falling back and getting him. That's the good job. We fall back and get him. When he steps up, we're right on him. The coverage was tight. I mean, he barely squeezed those two in there. But we're on him. That's the way to play him right there. Back up!
Back to throw. Steps, fires to the left. Intercepted!
Go! Go!
45, 50. He's at the 30. He's going to go all the way.
That's it. Let's go. We're gonna go back now.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Appreciate it.
Yeah, appreciate it. Yeah.
Yeah. Didn't look like it that first couple drives.
Good game, first half. But it just opened up.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we couldn't even slow them down the first two drives. But...
good luck the rest of the
thank you. Thank you.
That's good stuff.
That's great
stuff. Yeah. Yeah. Trey, at the beginning, when he's talking to Reggie Wayne or you know Adam like that, it's in how he's so complimentary during the game. It's almost like the way he tells us to handle, the way he would tell us to handle the media throughout the course of the week when you're talking about your opponents or anything
throw
like that.
Throw roses at him?
No, yes. His thing would be, this week we're just going to spray on the perfume, okay? Spray on the perfume. And for certain teams... Fellas, this week, no. Don't spray on the perfume. What I want you to do is unscrew the top and pour on the whole bottle. Make them feel good about themselves before we go out there and play. It's ironic. Yes.
Well, it's interesting just looking at that. The two things that I took away from it is the respect that other players on other teams have for Bill and the in-game adjustments. I mean, that Vince Wilfork play. Bill, outside of, you know, the field goal at the end of the Ravens game last year in the regular season, never seems to lose control of his emotions. No matter what the situation is, it seems like when the game starts, he's constantly in that coach mode, you know?
It's great because it really, for the players that end up spending time with him, that's the attitude that they really incorporate. Also, if something can happen and immediately you're thinking cause and effect of why and how, what I was talking to Field and Rodak about here. When something happens, either it's good or bad, asking yourself, why did that happen? And why was it good? Why was it bad? And how do we fix it? Or how do we keep on having that positive result? And I mean that adjustment where he put Wilfork on the defensive right because the run going to the defense is right. I remember we were playing the Steelers in Pittsburgh, and myself and Ted Johnson were in there at linebacker, and it was a similar situation where he wanted to Ringo the nose because they were all going to our right or the formation was going that way. Just a quick little adjustment that the timeout had stopped. We're running back to the huddle, and he says, hey, Ringo the nose. And so Ringo, meaning Ringo, a word starting with R, which means go to the right. Simple. That's what really football is. So we Ringo who the nose was, and he goes to the right, and the play starts to go that way. You make a tackle. Versus Jacksonville, when Eric Mangini was on the staff and Asante Samuel was a corner for us, we were playing a certain man technique when Bill wanted to change it to where we trap it. And Mangini and him really came up with it on the sideline. And I believe it might have been a playoff game where Zant got a pick six. That was off the adjustment, a trap adjustment where the corner would not stay with his man, but he would look for the number two receiver being inside of him if he makes an outbreaking cut because the corner's on the outside. So the slot receiver comes out to him. He makes an adjustment, sees that, comes off of his man, gives it up to the safety, and then comes off on that outcut, makes a pick, and he goes back to the end zone. Just little adjustments like that.
To that point, and we'll move on here, but I remember the regular season game against the Texans. The first two plays, one of them was called back on a penalty. Arian Foster just gashed the Patriots D. What did Bill do? Called a quick timeout. Right. Those were the only two successful running plays they had the rest of the game. He made the quick adjustment.
And when they played Josh McDaniels a couple years ago, when he was the head coach for the Broncos, and they brought out the wild horses, I think is what they called it, right. And they were running down the field on him, called a quick timeout, and all he did was send the safety off the edge. A quick little adjustment because he knows whatever football equation he gets, there's an answer to it or a counter to it, and he'll call it.
All right, so that's the brilliance of Bill sort of summed up in those little things. One of the things that's going to be very interesting going forward in 2013, I think a lot of people are wondering about, is it's great that Tom Brady signed that contract extension, and it's great that he's got it taken care of, and it's a more cap-friendly deal for the Patriots. But who is he throwing the football to? Mm. Okay? Because outside of Gronk and Aaron Hernandez, the list of wide receivers right now for the Patriots, it ain't great. Donald Jones, Michael Jenkins. It's like that old Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. Who are those guys? You know? And the Wes Welker impact. People need to understand, look, nobody in the history of the NFL had a better six-year run in catching the football than Wes Welker. From 2007 to 2012, he caught more passes in a six-year time frame than anybody else in the history of the NFL. And for not a lot of money, Mike, he's now moved on to Denver. So obviously Brady is great, but outside of Hernandez and Gronk, who is he throwing the ball to?
Well, to me, that's the story of this draft for the Patriots. They have to find a receiver in the draft, which, Trey, they haven't done since 2002 when they drafted Deion Branch and David Givens in the seventh round. And their track record at the position is not very good. There's no real answers out there in free agency right now. So it tells us the importance of that position, unless they're going to pull off a trade. But the last time they did that, was Chad Ochocinco. So that hasn't worked out that well.
He is available.
I think it's a great
point. Let's not go there again.
I think it's a great point, Trey. I'm just going to give you the list of receivers that they've drafted. They haven't even drafted that many. Branchon Givens, I mentioned in 2002. Bethel Johnson, they traded up for in 2003 in the second round. P.K. Sam in the fifth round, 2004. Chad Jackson, they traded up for him in the second round, 2006. Brandon Tate, third round, 2009. Taylor Price, third round, 2010. So I put myself in your position. You're saying, we need receivers. Based on that track record, what confidence should I have that we're going to be able to get one? That's why I think that, to me, is a huge story of this draft.
Trevor, how deep is this draft at wide receiver?
It's one of the deepest positions in the draft. And really,
hey, you got that going for you.
Yeah, well, so it's going to be hard to not get a guy that could help right now, whether they take him in the first round or I think they should wait till the second round. And what they really need is a receiver that can stretch the field. Because the good news about Gronkowski and Hernandez is that they are so versatile, and in the case of Gronkowski, with his height, they can be such great matchup problems that they can do a lot of things with them. The Patriots now have some running backs coming out of the backfield that can also be matchup problems. What they need is a receiver that can go deep to give Brady a club to burn the defense with when they bring safeties up to try to clog up what they're doing with the tight ends and the running backs. And that's what they need to find. There are a couple of guys out there that are fast receivers that are acrobatic, that can stretch the field. And they don't really even need to have the chemistry with Brady in all the routes and all the ways that Welker did. The new receiver, the fast receiver, the field stretcher, only has to be enough of a threat that the safety stays deep or he can make the play to burn them when Brady decides to pull that trigger.
You see, and that's a problem a lot of receivers have when they come into this system, because you can train all mini camp and OTAs and training camps to get ready in preseason, to get ready that week one opponent, okay? You know what the game plan is going to be because you know who you're playing on the schedule. So you can prepare them for that. But these young rookie receivers coming in, all of a sudden, they come back on the Monday the next day, and everything's different. And how much of a shock is that when you've been training for an offensive system and you have an offensive game plan, but now you're facing a defense that does different things? So what New England does is change everything. The receivers have to be smart. That's almost like the number one characteristic. And that's part of the reason why Chad did not succeed here. Because all he wanted to do was be out as the wide receiver out there, pass the numbers, and run routes. That's not what this offense does. You're going to be in motion. You're going to end up going and stack receivers into bunches. No matter, it depends on what the game plan is. You're going to have to think as a receiver in this offense.
And that's one of the things I think hurts the Patriots so much to lose Welker. Because how many thousands or tens of thousands of reps did Brady have with Welker? They knew what the other was thinking when they would see what the defense is doing after the snap. And you talked about the defensive adjustments. Those adjustments happen on offense as well. And Brady and Welker would know how to make the little adjustment to get to where the defense didn't have anybody and keep moving the chains and keep completing passes. Well, with Welker gone, people always ask about whether Amendola has the talent to replace him. I don't care about the talent so much as I care about the chemistry. And that takes years to develop.
And also, how many people in this room remember Wes Welker getting his head knocked off sometimes? It happened numerous times, right? He got hit every single game and you didn't think he was going to get up. Did he get up? He got up, okay? And that was probably what was more valuable to Wes than anything else, because there's a sign in the training room down there in the locker room. I remember seeing it when I played there. It's durability is more important than ability, okay? To be durable, because more than anything, they want you to be there for 16, all 16 weeks. This is the only thing Amendola has to prove to me.
It's a okay. big knock. It's a big knock
it is.
Against him.
That's the only thing he's got to prove to me, is he can take that hit and get up like Welker did, because I think he has similar ability, okay? But Welker got up every single time. Welker tore his ACL in week 17.
In Houston. That was Bernard Pollard. By the way, Bernard Pollard's... you guys should sign him anytime you can. The Patriots would be much safer if Bernard Pollard was on the Patriots and not on another team. Just throwing that out there.
So Welker was there week one of the next year, was he not?
Yes,
he's
he was.
Tough, he's durable, he rehabilitates, he put everything on the line for the team. Amendola right now, he has to prove to me he's not fragile.
Yeah.
Right.
And that's the only thing. That's the only thing.
And let's take that just one step further. Durability, reliability.
Yeah.
Whatever you can or cannot do isn't what's important. What's important is what they can predict that you will do during the game. Because Belichick and Brady can make a game plan, and they can win games if they know who can do what and can count on them to actually do it. Part of the way that you need to do that is to be on the field to begin with, and that's where your durability comes in.
And here's something that's interesting about that slot position, Trev. You're inside the numbers. You make your living inside the numbers. So that's almost like the danger zone where you know you're going to get hit because the hits are going to come because at the shallow level of the defense is the defensive line. And if you catch a ball 5 yards from that line of scrimmage, they're going to chase. Big defensive lineman, 15 yards down the field, they're not going to chase that ball, okay? But if it's 5 yards and they can see it, they start running, okay? So that's from shallow to deep. Outside in, outside linebackers. Inside, here come the safeties, here come the cornerbacks. There's the slot position. You're going to get hit, guaranteed.
All right, let's move on to something else that's going to be a big question mark for the Patriots in 2013. And, Trevor, you alluded to it at the top of the program here today. Look, no one's ever going to have a defense like the Bears did in 85 anymore. The league's just not going that way. But you're going to have to find a way to get selective stops, whether it's through turnovers or whether it's through just coming through and getting a team off the field on third down. Defense has been a problem for the Patriots the last couple of years, why they haven't won a Super Bowl when they've been so close. They bring in Adrian Wilson from Arizona, basically to play the role of Rodney Harrison on this team. But he's a few years older than Rodney Harrison was when he came over. Mike, what do you see Adrian Wilson's impact in the secondary?
One word, Trey, toughness. I don't even know if he'll be a starting safety in the base defense, but when you consider that the spread passing game is so prevalent, Patriots were in a sub-defense with 5 or 6 defensive backs 57% of the time last season. If he's your, you know, top sub defensive back, he's a 57% playtime player. He brings you toughness that, in my opinion, that's a big ingredient that has held this team back in some of those big time playoff games. He brings attitude, he brings toughness. Not the same ability as Rodney Harrison from when Harrison came here in 2003, but I think that's an ingredient the coaching staff did want to add this offseason.
And you can always tell, and when you're in the locker room with a Coach Belichick or hearing him talk the week leading to if he plays an opponent, okay, like when they played the Cardinals or something like that, he was a fan of Adrian Wilson. All right, he likes Adrian Wilson a lot, and I know he's very excited about this sign, okay? Now, Adrian Wilson, the one thing, if he does man that strong safety spot at times, what it does, with the signing of Tlaib, Devin McCourty gets to stay at safety. You got to leave him one place, all right? You know how hard it is to play safety one down and then be asked to play cornerback the next down? It's hard to do. I mean, McCourty was a Pro Bowl cornerback, and for him to be able to show that he can play free safety at a high level, you got to leave the kid there. You need him. He's got great range. So if Wilson can be that guy, and you got McCourty and you got Wilson, that could be something that they can build off.
Well, having McCourty there in the same spot, that's important too, because we talk chemistry between quarterbacks and receivers. It's also between safeties and corners. A lot of times you'll see corners that look like they're getting beat, when the truth of it is the safety needs to understand what the corner likes to do. Does he like to, in a certain route, jump the route? If that's the case, the safety needs to know that, see it materialize, and get up there to support him. There's all kinds of things that safeties do to help make corners look good, but they need to be in the same place, looking at the same things for a long period of time, and that's one of the reasons it's positive to have McCourty at free safety, staying there and developing that chemistry.
You're absolutely right. When Rodney was playing safety for our defenses, he knew the cornerback position, him and Ty Law, what they used to do before the snap. We'd get the defensive call, say if it was a cover two or something like that, and Rodney would go line up at corner. Because after I would call the play and we'd break the huddle, him and Ty would have a conversation just to give a little bit more disguise, a little bit more complexity of the way our defense looked. And I'd look out there, and I'd see Rodney line up as corner. And I'd look at him, what the heck's going on? But then I look back and I say, Ty, Brew, we're good. All right, they're good. That's how much they knew each other. And on the snap, they'd either play corner or safety, because you know in a cover two defense, really the corner just has to jam at the line of scrimmage and then come off, safety over the top, and they could switch on the line of scrimmage. So that's how much chemistry they had. Maybe Adrian Wilson can develop that.
All right, so that's the issue at safety. Cornerback, obviously they felt they needed to shore that up this past season. They made the trade deadline to get Aqib Tlaib. He played great for them. We saw him with a pick six in that game against Indianapolis. Then he got hurt in the Ravens game, and you could tell when Aqib Tlaib went out in the AFC title game, it changed dramatically what the defense was able to do. How important was that to get him back here in 2013?
I'll lead off with this. I think it was probably their number one priority, Trey, and I say that even knowing how important Wes Welker was to this team and how much I personally love Wes Welker. Exactly what you said. They almost built the game plan around him, not just in that game, but you mentioned the Texans game from earlier in the season. They just put him on Andre Johnson, and the ability to do that and say, everyone else, you can take care of what you need to do. This is squared away, is something they haven't had, really, I would say, almost since Ty Law, maybe Asante Samuel at the end of his tenure. And the other thing about Tlaib that people might not know is when he came here, his hip was bothering him even before he stepped on the field for the Patriots. He played through a lot of pain last year. So consider the fact they re-sign him, they get him into the offseason program, they can rehabilitate with him with the hip. You're going to have a healthier player from the start of this year. I think that's critical for them.
No, he came from Tampa Bay, yeah. Right? Shiano let him go.
Yes.
Shiano, I see similar in terms of certain mentalities on how he handles players as Belichick, okay? Hard wants him to work hard, wants a team atmosphere. Why would Shiano get rid of this guy, okay? I think Tlaib has to prove that he can have that Belichick, Shiano, Patriot type of work ethic, okay? That's something this guy came
from. Well, there was baggage, too, away from the field with Tlaib.
Sure. This guy came from a lot of losing teams, okay? And with that, sometimes an attitude gets developed being that around that type of football. When you're around a winning organization like this that's structured and they expect so much of their players, can he accept that type of off-season structure also? Because so much is demanded upon players in this organization, especially in the offseason. If he's willing to put that work in, he can be a quality sign.
Just to build off Teddy's point, I mean, I think the comparison's Randy Moss from 2007 when he came in on a one-year deal, and it was almost like prove to us, Randy, after the years in Oakland losing, that you can adjust and adapt to what we do here. Then they signed him to a three-year deal after that with Aqib. They just got him back on a one-year deal. So from a team perspective, that's actually sort of good. You might still not, like you're saying, Teddy, they might still be looking for that answer.
How old is Tlaib?
27.
27, 28.
See, whenever I need an answer, I just ask.
Yeah, right.
Real
yeah.
quick, because I can't. So 20. Right. So you got to understand the mentality of a 27-year-old professional football player, a cornerback that just signed a one-year contract. Do we all know where I'm coming from here? Okay. You know you can get another deal. All right, so New England can benefit from that. If Tlaib is thinking, I'm signing the one-year deal here, okay, I play lights out, and then possibly get the deal that I was searching for last year, but I didn't get it. I play the 1 year, then I'm unrestricted again, and maybe I get what I want. So that can benefit the Patriots, that type of mentality.
Head coaches will tolerate you as long as they need you. And you talked about how he can lock down a receiver better than any other corner on this team right now, which gives the defense much more flexibility to be able to do things with the safeties and other different kinds of disguises at the line of scrimmage and behind it. And I would ask you this, Teddy. When you've got that kind of capability in the secondary that you can do all kinds of different things up at the line of scrimmage, how does it change the way that the offense plays you?
Well, then now you're dictating terms to them because, I mean, what New England wants these cornerbacks to do against offenses like the Denver's, like the when Peyton was with Indy or any type of high-flying offense, which they're prevalent now in the National Football League, to disrupt their timing, the timing of their routes, to have a cornerback that can be up there on the line of scrimmage and jam and disrupt that. All right, they call it route disruption, disrupt the routes. If you have a cornerback that can do that, it really throws off the offensive structure, the timing of the patterns, which affects the pass rush and then gives even more time to get to the passer.
And, of course, you mentioned disruption. You can do that from the defensive line as well and create that play going nowhere before it even gets started. Vince Wilfork is going to be Vince Wilfork. He's going to play great. Chandler Jones, did he show you guys enough last year as a rookie?
In the beginning.
Yeah.
In the beginning. And we were talking about this right before we came. It seemed like he had injuries and also a combination of him hitting the rookie wall. And it's a real thing, people, believe me. Okay? Because when I was a rookie in 96 and we're at week 10, I was in my living room all by myself thinking, man, the season's still going. We still got 6 weeks left. That's how long sometimes you realize it is as a rookie. And now you push through that, yes, but if you have an injury also along with that, well, Chandler had an ankle injury.
Twice.
I go for my injury, get my information again, okay? He had the ankle injury there. So, I mean, it's a longer season than you used to. You have an injury, so he sort of tapered off towards the end of the season. I think next year, man, he's got to be there for all 16, Trey.
Yeah, that's something that we'll talk about. Maybe they can find in this draft as well when it looks more specifically in the draft coming up. This next segment is going to be a quick one. It's who's the biggest competition in the AFC East?
East.
I don't want to be over. I don't want you guys to be overconfident, but you know, let's face it. The New York butt fumbles aren't probably going to be very good. Bills are still trying to figure out a quarterback. Miami is interesting. Miami is very interesting. Do you think that competition might come from Miami?
Yeah, I think that's the obvious answer, Trey. And then take it one step further. What's the development of Ryan Tannehill? You know, at the start of this
with
panel.
Someone like Mike Wallace now,
exactly, and Dustin Keller,
yes,
and Gibson from the Rams, who they added. They added a lot of weapons for him to give him the best chance to be successful. But similar to what we said at the start of this panel, the importance of the quarterback position, I think there's still questions with Tannehill.
And also the questions about the quarterback-head coach relationship. And I do see good things with that in Miami. It seems like Tannehill, the head coaching quarterback relationship is Philbin. It's going to be all right. I mean, it looks like they're on the same page, and that's where you want to start. I think they'll be the stiffest competition for the New England Patriots this year. The Bills, they may be picking number one in the draft next year, to tell you the truth. The Jets are pushing the reset button, and it looks like the Dolphins are really making a strong push to, I'll say it, man. Looks like the Dolphins are making a push to be competitive, Trev.
They are, but I think they do need more experience at the quarterback position. In college, quarterback is largely a physical position. In the NFL, it's mostly a mental position. And even though Tannehill says that he knew the offense coming in because his college coach came to help coach him in with the Dolphins, all that's well and good. But still, defenses in the NFL are so much more complex, and there's nobody better in the NFL as a defensive coach than Bill Belichick at seeing what a young quarterback does, what he does not do well, and messing with his head. Not physically so much, mentally. And so until Tannehill can overcome the challenge of matching mental wits with Belichick, I wouldn't worry too much about it.
Okay, so if we feel like the Patriots right now, thank you, whoever that was, Mom, if we feel the Patriots are pretty strong to take the AFC East again, how do they stack up against the rest of the conference? If the Ravens lost 8 starters, 6 on defense, they're probably going to take a step back. Is it New England and, dare I say, Denver looking like the 1-2 teams in the AFC? Or Houston as well?
For the final four, the two in the AFC I see being New England and Denver. And for obvious reasons, I think the Welker addition is going to be huge for Denver, Trey. Seriously,
yeah.
I think it's going to be huge for them. Listen, the Houston Texans, come on. I mean, really. I mean, to see a team be on a big stage and fold like that, I mean, mentally, it looked like they weren't about it. I mean, they didn't want it. You know what I mean? I mean, when Andre Johnson put all the pressure on them before the regular season game.
Biggest game in franchise.
And then the first part of the game, they weren't too well. They didn't do too well. That was it. And then to see Schaub against Cincinnati in the wild card, then coming in here. Bro, that guy ain't ready. Not ready. It's New England and Denver in my mind. That's who I see. Trev, what about you, buddy?
Well, I throw in the Ravens, even though they've kind of been dismantled now in terms of free agency. I think their defense will be better next year. They've got younger at linebacker, as good as Ray Lewis has been. Physically, he has not been dominant the last couple of years because of his age. They'll get younger and better at that position, I think, certainly more athletic. When you look at pass rushing, Paul Kruger is gone in free agency, but they signed Elvis Dumervil, right? I think that's an upgrade. I think they'll be better at that position. Suggs coming back healthier next year. So I think you've got to watch out for the Ravens, too, because I think they'll be upgraded on defense in their athleticism, and Joe Flacco is only going to get better.
But when you lose gamers, all right?
Reed, Lewis.
You lose gamers.
Pollard.
I seriously doubt the Ravens next year because of the gamers that they lost. I mean, Ray Lewis was old, okay, but he was that defense. Ed Reed, Anquan Boldin might have been the biggest for me. These guys in the biggest games, when you got those moment of truth plays like I was talking about, I mean, those are the guys that were going to make them. Kruger made them too. To see if that's in Dumervil, I haven't seen him do it in those, I mean, boom, championship games, Super Bowls. These were gamers to me that they lost, and that was huge.
Just one final point, just bringing it home. That's my one concern for the Patriots based on what we've seen this offseason. You think about gamers that they've had the last few years. I put Welker near the top of the list, and also Danny Woodhead. I mean,
put
to
him
me,
there.
That's
put
a
him
loss.
There.
That's a loss that we haven't really touched on, you know?
It's a great point. It's
and
a great
I think,
point.
You know, I think they'll probably be fine, but I do enter this year sort of with that question of have they lost too much of what Teddy's talking about, that those gamer-type
It's
play.
3rd and 17. Let's make give a draw to Woodhead. He'll get it, all right? It's 3rd and 15, a little screen pass to Woodhead. He'll get it. Those type of guys, those are championship guys.
But those guys you always have to replace. And the Patriots have made a lot of money over the years by letting gamers go, guys that have proven they could play and still play at a high level to get younger and then continue to replenish it. So that's something that the Ravens will need to prove that they can do at that same level.
Well, keep this in mind, too, when you're talking about the Ravens. Forget the number of losses. Do you guys know the last Super Bowl champion actually win a playoff game the next year? New England, you're exactly right, after Super Bowl 39. So every other Super Bowl champion has either not made the playoffs or lost in the first round the following year. It's been very difficult to try to get back and even win a game in the postseason, let alone repeat as champion. Okay, you guys got your fact or fiction cards out there? They love this at the ESPN home offices. We call this audience participation. So we're going to play a little game called fact or fiction. All right, we'll take the statement. You guys hold up your signs, and we'll see whether they guys agree with you. You guys ready?
Yeah.
All right, here we go. First question. We need, like, cheesy game show music right now, don't we? Hi, everybody. I'm Wink Martindale. Get ready to hold those placards out now for valuable prizes. That was terrible.
It was.
Thank you, Teddy. Thank you. We're a perfect teammate. Fact or fiction, the Patriots should trade out of the first round for deeper picks. Oh, it says panel first. Sorry. You guys go first. Should they trade out of the first round, fact or fiction?
I'll say fact. They only have 5 picks right now, Trey. They need some more ammunition.
Pretty solid draft in the second round also. I'm going to say fact.
I'll say fact unless one of the better pass rushers is still available. Then I'd stay there and take that pass rusher.
All right. Fact, and sort of fact. What about you guys? I think fact wins that one, right? I think fact did that one pretty good. Okay, next question. The Patriots' number one priority in the draft should be cornerback. Fact or fiction?
I'll go fiction.
No, you guys are second. You guys are second.
I'll go fiction, Trey. Bring Talib back, Kyle Arrington back, Alphonso Dennard. We'll see what happens with his legal issues, but let's just assume they're going to work out. I think they have enough players there to get by. They could always use more, but I'll go fiction on this one.
I'm going to go fact to get someone else that they can rely on in that late first or that second round area. I think it would be huge for this team. Since Rozai Dowling has not turned out to be what they hoped for when they selected him at the 33rd pick.
Yep.
I mean, they need to. It almost looks like they need to look to replace that guy.
I'd say fiction, because it's easier to find a corner that can give you productive service than it is a real quality one-on-one pass rusher. And so
there's a lot of those in this draft, by the way. Pass rushers.
Pass rushers?
Yes.
There's more than usual.
There's depth there.
And there are a couple of guys that, for reasons not of their own fault, injury or lack of experience, that might fall down to where the Patriots are.
Yeah. All right, so a little split vote here. Fact or fiction, cornerback is the number one priority. Now, fiction's winning this one.
That looks like fiction.
That's so much fiction, I feel like I'm in a library. That was so bad. That was so bad. Wow. You guys are tough. Fact or fiction, panel first. The Ravens-Patriots best rivalry in football.
Football?
This
football. Football.
I'm going to say fiction.
I would go fiction, too.
Yeah, I'd go fiction, but I'll tell you this. What makes a rivalry most heated is when it matters most, and are the last two AFC championship games.
So what do you guys say, by the way? Fiction? Wow, that's like a clean sweep with like 3 facts thrown in there just for fun. Mm. Just out of curiosity, what do you think is the best rivalry in football?
Well, first thought I had, Trey, just when you asked it, I mean, I was thinking of Welker coming back as a Bronco.
Absolutely.
But, I mean, that's sort of the present year. I mean, I also like Patriots-Jets. I mean, that because of the history of
as
it.
As a Patriots fan, you should. Well, it's pretty one-sided.
Here's the new school rivalry of the NFL, Seahawks-49ers.
That's a great one.
That's going to be it.
One.
Yeah, I go back old school, Giants-Cowboys.
Yeah, that's a good one, too. All right, we got plenty more for you guys, but we're going to take a little intermission. We got some raffle prizes to give away. So is Jesse from the Patriots around here? She's going to handle that. Jesse, there she is. Give Jesse a hand, everybody. We'll be back in a little bit.